RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 144 with guest Stephen Rose, recorded Friday, January 8th, 2010. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everyone. Richard, how are you today?
I am well, sir, and just plunking along here, looking forward to spring showing up, because boy, oh boy, it's winter right now.
Yeah, it's been really windy and cold, hasn't it?
Yeah, and well, but not snow. Last year we were buried in snow. This year it's just rain. But the main thing for us up in Vancouver is the insanity that is the Olympics.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You guys are... I hear they're building TV sets in the middle of the street.
Yeah, they're closing down chunks of downtown. Like, you just don't want to go there. And the highway up to Whistler, if you can't prove you have parking, you can't drive on it.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. It's going to be all buses.
Vancouver is an amazing city. It's a beautiful city, but it's already built. There's not a whole lot of room to build new stuff in Vancouver, so I guess you just have to find space where it's available
where
and just start absconding with it.
Well, we got mountains to the north and mountains to the east and ocean to the west and Americans to the south. So we're boxed in here.
Yeah, those damn Americans. There you go, blaming them again.
I wasn't going to say that.
Us, I mean. Oops. Yeah,
there you go. Hey, let's jump into our show here. We've got Stephen Rose with us again. He's the senior community manager for the Windows client for IT pros. Before joining Microsoft, he spent 10 years as an IT consultant working with Fortune 500 companies, as well as a speaker at IT and developer conferences worldwide. He is an MCSE and an MCT and used to be an MVP, but you can't be an MVP and work for Microsoft. Welcome, Stephen.
Hey, Stephen.
Howdy. How are you guys doing?
I'm well, sir.
Doing well.
It's funny, I was just up in Vancouver a few months ago. I had a chance to see you and some of the other folks as we were doing Train the Trainers. And I also agree, I forgot how beautiful a city Vancouver is until you get up there and you're like, I got to spend more time up here.
Yeah.
And we all get busy. And this year with launch, and I've been doing a lot of traveling, it's been a little crazy. You actually didn't do a whole lot of traveling towards the end of the year, which was unusual for
me?
Correct? You.
I was on the road almost solid for 2 months.
Were you really?
All of October and all of November.
I didn't see all of your tweets from many exotic locations. So. That's what I'm used to following.
Yeah.
Going to go see the Sphinx, walking into the Luxor, landing in, you know, again, some country who, you know, has a population of 12 or something
well,
like that.
You know, there's a price to be paid. I had to go down to Redmond, to Microsoft just yesterday. And when I got to the drive-through border, the guy goes through my passport and notices my work permit for Pakistan and my visitor's visa for Dubai and my multiple entries into Egypt. And he sort of looks at me sideways like, what is it you do exactly? So my car got checked over thoroughly yesterday.
I can imagine.
Yeah,
I imagine.
So, Stephen, last time we talked about Windows 7 being something new. Now, it's starting to look like maybe the biggest difference, non-technology difference between Windows Vista and Windows 7 is that Windows 7 is being deployed. Is that fair to say?
we had close to 30% deployments for Windows Vista, so one out of every three. So we weren't too bad with that one, but
okay.
A lot of folks are looking at it right now very, very seriously. We've had a lot of companies, and I think one of the big differences between Vista was we had a lot of companies who actually did pilots while this product was still in beta, and then
right.
also while in release candidates. So we have companies like BMW, which has already rolled out 400 RTM seats and is looking to get close to 5,000, you know, by this October, that they've actually
right.
been running it now for 4 to 6 months. And I think that's one of the big differences. All the stuff didn't happen after launch. We had many, many companies that were using it before. One of the great resources, if folks want to kind of see, you know, companies like GlaxoSmithKline and BMW and Deutsche Bank and things along that line, they can go out to our case studies website, and we have got just a plethora of case studies of companies who have already rolled out you know, Windows 7 and their experience in doing so. So yes, people are rolling it out, but I think they were willing to roll it out at an earlier point, and that's been one of the really big differences for us. So it's really exciting.
Are these folks mostly coming from Vista to 7, or are they doing the XP to 7 jump?
We have a lot of XP to 7. So there are a few Vista, but most of these folks are going through the app compat testing. They're utilizing all the app compat resources. They're deciding whether they're going to, you know, build it or shim it or virtualize it, you know, or upgrade or go that route. So, you know, a lot of folks didn't go to Vista. And if, when they didn't do the work to get their apps compatible. So now they're coming back to have to do it now. But we've done a lot of, I think, really good things to make it easier for folks. And I think that's really helping our implementation.
Certainly my experience has been that the app compat story for 7 is stronger than it was at Vista. There's tricks that 7 does. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about the sort of redirecting of writing files that actually make it a better platform than anything else I've seen so far.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I bought a netbook. I bought an Asus netbook, and one of the features that was in the netbook with XP was the fact that you could take your finger on the touchpad, and if you went diagonally and pulled your fingers apart, it would embiggen the web page, and then it would
ensmallen
it. Yes, embiggen. If you are in Germany and use that word with a translator, they have no clue what it means, and they throw their hands up in the air. I found that out firsthand. But when I installed 7, that feature was not available. So I downloaded the driver for XP, tried to install it. It said, hey, this isn't an XP machine. And by simply running it in compatibility mode, installed the driver beautifully, and I have my embiggen feature, and my life is that much better for it. So,
okay. So, I mean, in the first couple minutes of our show here so far, we've in some way touched on everything that matters for someone who has to make a decision as to how to do what they're going to do. Should they be rolling out Windows 7, staying on Windows ME and Windows 95, or what should they be doing? So now here's what it comes down to. Let's talk the business side, because I think we have a tendency to try to go off into the technical weeds, and the technical parts of Windows 7 are fascinating and amazing. But ultimately, the CFO, the CTO, and the CIO, when they're talking to the IT management staff about putting a project together to actually make this change, they don't care about all the technical things. They care about how much it costs, what the opportunity cost is, what impact it's going to have on the business, and they care about what the end result is going to be. What do I get for all that cool technology bells and whistles? But they don't want to get mired down in the details. I think we have a tendency to try to talk about all the other technical stuff. What, since you're seeing BMW and others that are rolling these out, and you have good experience in seeing how to make this work well, what do the IT guys need to be thinking about, and what's important?
I think the first thing is to know what other companies have done. One of the tools that we put up on the Springboard site at technet.com/springboard is we have an ROI calculator. That's one of the best places to start. How many machines do you have? What is it going to take to get them over? And figure out, first of all, is there a really solid cost savings? Because that's one of the best things when you walk into any C-level is saying, hey, I can cut our licensing costs by 50%. I can save, you know, about, you know, $500,000 in IT infrastructure costs. Tuvo Nord was able to lower their cost of ownership by 37%. Continental did an energy savings of about $2 million by deploying Windows 7. So these are the types of things where when you take a look at things like case studies, which you'll find at our enterprise website, which is the microsoft.com/enterprise, you click on case studies. There's a lot of case studies by looking at what other companies have done, running an ROI calculator like we have on Springboard, reading, you know, the different ways to optimize. You can put together a really good proposal, and it's hard when somebody walks in and says, hey, you know, we could save ourselves $500,000 a year. We could reduce our IT costs, and you know, we've talked about this on the show before, the IT troubleshooters, all of these tools that we've done to empower an end user to troubleshoot and solve a lot of their own problems, features like direct access and branch cache that also make it easier. When you turn around and you see not only a cost savings in management and in power, but when you start to see it in reduced IT costs, what enables your company to go from being reactive to being proactive, because you have the time to start setting more processes in place, that's where the savings really starts to come in. And it overshadows the learning curve of moving from XP to 7, learning a new operating system. And as we're learning, many companies are actually looking to roll out Windows 7 and Office 2010 at the same time, figuring, well, we got to train them on a new version of Windows. Let's train them on a new version of Office.
Right.
A lot of them didn't go to 2007. And let's just do it all at once. And I think that that's a great way to really do that. And utilizing some of the tools like AppV, be able to run two different versions of the application simultaneously as you wean your people over. So I think that there's a lot of smart things that companies are doing to help move their end users over and helping to save money and time and energy within their companies.
So Richard alluded to the fact that, you know, the application compatibility capabilities in Windows 7 are more robust. And so for a typical, you know, medium or large enterprise that may have some legacy software that they have to run, plain and simple, even if they don't want to, but they just simply have to, what do they need to be thinking about? For somebody who's uninitiated and doesn't understand how application compatibility and the tools work and Windows deals with it in Vista and in Windows 7, what do I need to know?
I think that that's a great question. And usually the answer that most people say is XP mode. I'm going to run XP mode and that will solve all my problems. And I'll tell you, XP mode is a great feature. And if you are a small business, if you're managing under 100 desktops, that can be a really, really great opportunity for you. The problem is with something like XP mode, which basically runs your application in a full version of Windows XP on your desktop. The problem you run into is now you're managing two sets of desktops. You've got to join everyone to the domain. You have to add antivirus to each one. You have to set up group policies and manage that. So there's a lot of extra work that you're giving yourself. So, you know, over 100 users, that really tends to become cumbersome. But that, right out of the box, can be one of the easiest, simplest solutions for if I've got a group of 5 users in my accounting department who are running some older proprietary piece of software that will not work. But, you know, you really want to sit down and say, do we want to buy a new version? If your software is 8 or 9 years old, you've paid for that now 10 times over. If you're still on XP, you didn't pay to get new machines to go to Vista. You didn't do all that. So you saved yourself a lot of money. Now it's time to spend a little bit of that. Maybe it's to move to the newest version that is Vista and Windows 7 compatible. Maybe it's shimming it using a tool like Act 5.5. And shimming, for those people who aren't familiar with it, is exactly as simple as it sounds. If you've got a wobbly table, you stick a matchbook underneath one of the legs of the table and it doesn't wobble. And that's what shimming does. Shimming basically says that when the app goes to look at the name of the operating system, it covers its mouth and lies. When it says, hi, are you XP? It says, yes, I'm XP, when it's really Windows 7. And if that software will run, it will allow it to run. So by simply having a shim built, that can sometimes solve the issue. Maybe it's bringing in a developer and building a new front end. Your application works fine, but it's building a web-based front end or re-engineering the app to work properly with Vista or Windows 7. Or it's moving into a virtualization space. Maybe it's doing MedV. It's running it in a managed experience where we're basically pushing out apps. Somebody launches their desktop, they see a new app, they click it, they run it. It's still running within XP, but it's a completely managed experience on their desktop. Or maybe we go completely wired, unwired. We go to like an RDC, a remote desktop experience, or a la thin client. So there's a lot of different options that IT pros have, really depending on how many applications they've tested and are not going to work, are not part of application compatibility. And one of the key things that I keep reminding folks is just because something is not supported, it doesn't mean it's not going to work. We have companies who right now are saying, you know, our application will work in Windows 7, but we're not going to be able to support this until May of this year. And it's because they're updating their training and they're updating their staff. So if it's a really key piece of software, sitting down with that company who manufactures it and talking to them about their plans can also help to make that easier too.
It seems to me that the sort of XP compat feature is the final fallback, that because I've found that there's a remarkable number of apps that just worked. In fact, XP apps that didn't work in Vista did work in Win 7. Just because the better aliasing alone solved the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Right-clicking the EXE and doing hi, pretend this is Windows XP Service Pack 3 and run that.
Right.
That will work for some of those apps as well. And it's helped me install some drivers like I said, on my netbook that were absolutely key to me being able to work. So there's a lot of different options, and it's really sort of sitting down and going through our, you know, pilot area and our deploy area on Springboard and looking at the resources and kind of having this conversation. But it's great because it's going to force you as a company to sit down and inventory your apps. Run a product like Map. Map is free. Use the, you know, the inventory services. Or if you've got, you know, MDOP, use AIS. But go through and take a look. What do we have? Most companies, if you ask them, they have no clue how many applications they're running, how many different versions. I was saying to someone that for a lot of folks moving from XP to 7, it's kind of like moving. It's time to clean house. It's time for the stuff that you haven't used in a long time to really say, do we still need this? Do we still use this? Is there a better solution? Rather than repacking up everything and moving it to your new space, really take a look at what you have, make those decisions, and really take a look at things. I know there's companies I've worked for, and I'm sure you guys have too, where you walk into their server room and in the corner is some beige 486, and you're like, what's that? And you're like, oh, yeah, that's one of our most important applications. The guy that wrote it died 8 years ago, and we're afraid to touch it because if the machine dies, we can't do this one thing that basically, you know, sends electronic money back and forth. And you're like, seriously? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, why isn't that virtualized so it doesn't become an issue, backed up, and get rid of that box? So it's the time to have those types of conversations.
Right.
And yeah, if you haven't taken a look at Map, that's just an awesome tool. The ability to just turn it on, give it administrator passwords, and it goes in and inventories all the machines. It's Microsoft.com/map.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got some really good videos that we've done on using Map, using USMT, the User State Migration Toolkit, that if you're moving someone from XP to Windows 7, once you've installed the new OS and the new apps will actually move all their data back to right where it's at. It's part of our internal IT. When you hit F12, it says, I want Windows 7. So it takes you from, you know, your machine, migrates all your data, updates your apps if you want Office 2010 or you want to stay with Office 2007. So the automation that we did a lot of that work during Vista and people just didn't take advantage of.
Right.
We built upon that and either have those same great tools or have newer versions like the new version of Map, the new version of Act, the new version of MDT 2010. Some great things that we've been working on that people, because they looked at deployment as just ghosting a machine, have really missed out on, that we can now package apps. And we can sequence them and really do some really great things to make your life easier. And the days of having to start blowing out machines by imaging them one at a time doesn't need to happen. Jeremy Chapman is one of our product team guys who we're first featuring on our talkingaboutwindows.com website, wrote a great demo in which he sends an end user an email that says, you've not upgraded to Windows 7, click here. They click it and it automatically starts the automated migration process.
You know, one of the big pieces on this whole thing that I think people are concerned about is that there isn't a simple migration from XP to Win 7. It's not like you can just stick the disk in and it'll install over top of it. There's more steps to that. Can we go sort of drill into what are the issues? What do you got to do to get people's desktops across to Win 7?
And that's the big thing is, you know, Win 7 is a lot more secure. It's a very, very different framework. You know, what's great now is we see the single update. When we had Vista SP2 and Windows Server 2008 SP2, we were able to push all of those out at once because it's a single framework. So it does make some changes. One of the things that you'll find is if you're on an XP machine and you're going to Windows 7, when you get to, if you put in a CD, you have a choice for a clean install or an upgrade. But what the upgrade does is it moves all of your current data into a Windows.old folder, which you'll find inside of your system directory. And it's basically held all of your data. So it basically rebuilds the whole framework. It deletes all your apps, builds Windows 7, builds the appropriate drivers, and then we'll take all of the data from your, like I said, that was in your My Docs, your pictures, your videos, all the stuff that you have, and puts it in a Windows.old. And then you can move that data back. So that's about the extent of the off-the-shelf migration that you're going to get from XP to 7. But using a tool like the User State Migration Toolkit, we can automate that process. And by using PowerShell, we can actually, during the installation process, give a user choices where they can say, hey, I would like to be able to install Office 2007. It's automatically choosing to install the updated antivirus software, and they can pick and choose from their applications to make it easier. So knowing a little bit of PowerShell, utilizing tools like USMT or MDT, you can do some very, very smart things to make it easier for users to go over. The great thing is you're not going to lose your data when you go from XP to 7, but you are going to have to do your homework to see which apps are going to be compatible and which ones aren't. The App Compat Center at Microsoft.com/AppCompat has created some great tools that will go through and will inventory all your applications and tell you which ones will work and which ones won't. They provide lists of what is being worked on and what is not. So, and also utilizing the new compatible with Windows 7. We got away from that, you know, what was it, is compatible with and works with. It's now just one sticker for new devices for Windows 7 as well as the Play 2 features. So I think we've simplified it a lot. There's some heavy lifting that's going to have to be done, and IT pros know this. So now's a great time to, you know, download the enterprise demo if you're looking for a full version and want to do that final testing and test that stuff out.
And the latest version of USMT now is 4?
I believe that to be correct.
And that's the one specifically for 7.
Yes,
and of course, my reflex when I look at this tool is this is fine one desktop at a time. I think it's much more interesting to think about how you would do 100 desktops with this, working with PowerShell.
I think PowerShell, you know, utilizing PowerShell and mixing it with other tools like, you know, like the AIK or, you know, whether you're going to do a virtual hard disk deployment and doing dynamic driver provisioning now, which you can start to do that. We've added a lot of really great new features that does make this a lot easier to do. The fact that you can now build your image on a VHD and use that as a deployment method. We've created so many different ways now, and it's not to make it more confusing. If anything, it's to allow people that are looking for a light touch, a medium touch, no matter what level they're looking to do it at, to find an easy, simple way to be able to sort of bring that together and build that out. So I think that a lot of the tools that we have put together over the past year or two have really helped to make a large difference in making that a lot easier to work with. And using USMT 4.0, using the App Compat Toolkit 5.5, together really creates a great strong set of tools, and even using things like WDS, Windows Deployment Services, depending on what level you guys have. Again, it's sit down, take a look at the research, the size of your company, how many apps, how many desktops you want to deploy, and start to make these decisions, and then chat with other folks. Go to your user group meetings. You know, find out what the other local users are doing and talking about. Join us on the forums. There's a lot of ways to get that feedback and feel comfortable in the choices that you're making for those of you who have not gone down those paths before.
It does feel like there's certain tiers here. You know, when you've got 15 desktops, you could go out and do it by hand overnight.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But, and when you've got 5,000, well, it better be totally automated. There's no other way to do it. It's the guy with 50. That I think really struggles, that he's a challenge of, I don't have that many resources. You know, it's just me or it's me and this other guy, and we're trying to keep these things running well. But mm-hmm. Maybe we sort of talk through the tool stack for that mid-tier guy. Is it MDS? Is it, you know, MDT? There's too many tools, man.
I think if you're, you know, one of the things that we put up was we did this whole, you know, if you're less than 100, you're going to do high touch with retail media.
Right.
If you're 100 to 200, you're really this high touch with standard image. And what you really want to look at there is, you know, you've got your retail or volume license media. You want to use the Windows AIK and you want to use MDT and use ACT. At that point, you don't need to look at things like WDS, Windows Deployment Services. You don't need to get into the configuration managers, you know, and things along that line. Really learning MDT 2010, if you're 100 to 200 and using ACT to try to shim those few apps, should put you in a really, really good place to allow you to manage those easier and to really sort of step back and learn how to package so that when you get new desktops, that when you get new users, that you're able to be able to push that out quickly, simply, and easily. You know, the great thing is you can, with the new version of MDT, you can access deployment shares from anywhere on your network. You can replicate those files and those settings across all of your sites. You can manage your drivers. You can replace drivers. So when a new version of a driver comes in, it's very, very easy for you to say, hey, there's a new Bluetooth driver. Here's that package. You can manage your operating systems through that. And they have a really great UI to do that. And it's all PowerShell command line functionality when you want it. So I think we've made – that's probably one of the best tools for that 100 to 200 segment. If you're going to go learn anything, Watch our videos on MDT. There is some sandboxes where you can play with MDT on Microsoft Learning. Learn that, and it'll put you in a really, really good place.
Yeah, there's a tendency to think about deployment as a tactical one-time thing when it's really isn't it. I think what you're saying is that it's really tied to the life cycle of the operating system and the machines that you're managing over time. The deployment of it, or the upgrade, or, you know, fresh deploy or whatever, is really just the first set of steps in a life cycle management.
Yeah, and it's an ongoing process. So the easier it is for you to say, I just got 10 new boxes. I want to be able to get not just one image, but the correct image for the correct person based on that. I mean, now we're dealing with laptops. It's not like in the old days when I'd go out and go buy, you know, 100 compact boxes and throw them out on the floor. I've got 10 Lenovos and 5 Dells and 3 large multimedia HPs for the people who are doing that. I have all these different machines for the machine to connect to the network and go, oh, you're a Lenovo. Here is all the Lenovo drivers, and here's the latest ones, and here's the correct image. And oh, you're in sales. You don't need publisher, but you need access to be able to roll out those packages appropriately. That really becomes a great time saving based upon where they're at within my corporate structure, within my OU, and based upon their role and the type of machine that they're using. So the more of that that I can automate, again, the more time I have from going reactive to being proactive, which really makes a large difference. And again, empowering the end users where they can literally plug in, say, yes, I'm the Lenovo. They click it. They're done. They walk away. 15 minutes later, there's a brand new machine ready to go, totally configured on their laptop. Here at Microsoft, end users are given laptops. It's up to us to run the F12 and to do that installation ourselves.
Difference between being a help desk, a reactive help desk, and being a proactive service desk, I guess, isn't it?
I still think, you know, I like the end game here. I like where you get to, but I think the average listener is thinking, how do I even get started to move down this path? What's the first tool I run?
I think the first tool you need to do is you need to find out what you have on your network. I think if you ask most IT pros, how many people are running the software? How many Lenovos do you have? What service pack do they have? Most people don't even know that. So using either an AIS tool or using Map and finding out what's on your network is absolutely your first step. Figure out what you have, both right in on the desktop and in your server room. Sit down and take a look. Like I said, I'm amazed when I would walk in as a consultant, the first 3 things I would take a look at, first of all, was license compliancy.
Right.
And I think that that's something that people overlook. I had one company where they had bought licenses for standard Office, but everybody was using Pro.
Oops.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, okay, A, they don't need publisher.
Yeah.
And B, you're way, way, way out of compliance. So
yeah,
that's probably one of the first things to do is who's running what?
Yeah.
And how are we going to lock this down? And if you're upgrading your server, and a lot of companies are going to 64-bit because they want to run Exchange. They want to go to server 2008 R2.
Yeah.
The days of 32-bit servers are over. Everything's going to be 64. That it's a great time to clean house and do that asset. Take a look at what you have. What's old? Are your security? Is it properly set up? Are people in the correct OUs and the correct groups? Do they have the correct rights? Again, I go back to that. It's like you're moving to a new house. Take this time to go back and really look at everything and clean everything up. Don't just move the mess from 32 to 64 and from Windows XP to Windows 7. You have so many new security features. You have 140 new security features alone for IE8 that you can take advantage of. This is a great time to buy BitLocker ready and laptops that you can now go ahead and lock that down with Windows. Move some of your users to Windows mobile devices. There's a great new feature in Exchange 2010 that you can send a command to wipe a phone remotely. That's just a great simple security feature. And some of these things that as you start to do your research, you can go, wow, this saves a lot of time, saves a lot of trouble, saves a lot of effort. So it really goes back to doing your research and planning this out and taking your time to do it right.
So we start with Map. That mm-hmm. gives us a sort of overall picture of what OSs we're running, what apps we're running. Then I guess the next step has got to be working on app compat, building the mm-hmm. first machines with Win7 and making sure every application runs, deciding
Absolutely.
Whether we're shimming or virtualizing, all of these different choices. I could see you'd end up staging this out. You're going to end up with, you know, your classic information worker who's using primarily Office and those sorts of things is probably the first guys to go across.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to end up with some odd department that's got very unique software needs as the last guys to go across.
Yeah, engineering, things, accounting, things like that will tend to be last. But yeah, salespeople and help desk are two of the best areas that you can move over first. because most of the sales applications, your ACT, your Goldmines, your Salesforce.com, unless you're using some sort of custom system, are going to be all probably already 80 to 90% already there.
Right.
And help desk workers, you know, it's your help desk software, which, you know, should probably work within that if you've updated, if it's something that's old and XP based, again, virtualizing that and also locking that down. I know, again, as in manning help desks, that when you call, when somebody calls and says, hi, I'm looking for this, it's great if you're going to standardize those images and lock them down, maybe through remote desktop services or by using some sort of virtualization to say, the fourth icon down is X, click that, and it will always be the fourth icon down for every user.
Right.
Removing the customization, the chance for people to remove icons, makes it easier to manage those help desk calls and reduces that cost.
Well, and getting your help desk workers, you know, using the operating system and software that they need to answer the questions about is, you know, before anybody else is pretty important as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So again, we go back to that. It's that great opportunity to standardize your configurations and applications to make, again, the help desk calls, to make managing this a lot easier to do. And it is a lot of work. We know it's a lot of work, but it's work that IT pros have put off and have just kept working with XP, and you know they've gone to Service Pack 3. Maybe they've installed IE8, but they really haven't gotten to that point. So it's going to be a great time for those IT professionals who do not have 20 years of experience to be able to work on the same playing field by going out and educating themselves, watching the videos, going to the seminars, doing the labs, and being on that same level of deployment playing field, sometimes to some of those people who have not deployed in 10, 15 years and have just been ghosting and just pushing out images. So it's a great opportunity for a lot of folks without that level of experience to really become professionals in deployment and get those aspects out and be able to compete on that same playing field. And I think that that's an exciting thing for those people with only 2 or 3 years worth of experience that didn't get those years with NT and that started with Windows 2000 and, you know, have not had a lot of deployment experience.
Guys who are not damaged goods, is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. Right. Or some of us older guys who are stuck in our ways and like to do things one way. There are so many different ways that, you know, I'm chatting with some of the younger IT pros and they're like, oh yeah, I use this and I mix it with this. And they find these great combinations of mixing tools to make their life easier, where I'm like, I've just used these three tools and, you know, I upgraded my skill set for Vista, but I tend to stick with these three, but I tend to work with one type of company, a much larger enterprise.
Right.
These guys go from 10 users to 300 back to 50. So they're far more flexible in their strategies in doing this. And it's great that we have so many different levels that are right for those people doing it.
Okay, so we've spent half an hour talking about the great tools and the business stuff and what to do. What is the one thing that you think people who don't follow the steps properly will do that they just should not do when it comes to executing a Windows 7 migration? What's the biggest mistake that people can make?
I think the biggest mistake that people can make is just trying to do the one-size-fits-all image. I think the days of, you know, using a ghost-like tool don't make sense anymore. I think the fact that we can multicast, that we can blow out large, you know, different speed machines and different images at the same time, you know, putting in every driver in the world that somebody needs, no matter what type of machine they have, it just doesn't make sense and it's slow. I think we need to be able to, you know, set it up so that users can say, and users know what kind of laptop they're using or desktop they're using, to be able to customize that per the user, to keep it small, which keeps it running quickly and makes it much easier to manage. I know it was that, well, I just have one image for my desktops and one for this. I don't think that that really makes sense anymore. So I think that's one of the first areas that the thought process change needs to happen. And by looking at these different options, that they're going to, you know, that just virtualize it is not always the answer. I think that there's different levels. It's much more granular and we have a lot more control than we had back in the XP, back in the NT, back in the 2000 days, where it really was a one size fits all.
Steven, I think we're just about out of time. Any final words?
I'm going to be at the Tech Mentor Conference in Orlando in March with Mr. Manassi and Ms. Layfield. So they're going to be there as well. I'm doing the keynote. That should be a great conference. A lot of good IT pros. They're going to be talking about deployment and virtualization and piloting and lots of great technologies. I've attended the Tech Mentor Conference before, but getting to sit on the big stage in the front will be great. And I'm assuming I'm going to see you guys in New Orleans for TechEd this year as well.
Absolutely.
So that'll be the big stuff coming up. So as always, visit our Springboard site at Microsoft.com/Springboard. And the Enterprise site, if you're looking for case studies and information to start having that conversation. And let me know how your pilot goes. They can follow me on Twitter or visit Windows Team blog and click on Springboard. And we love to hear the types of issues that people are having, what's working well, what isn't, and how we can do it better. So,
Stephen Rose, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Stephen.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen. We'll see you soon.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.